A big hello and welcome to episode 4 of the Sand New Sisters podcast. I'm Amber.
And I'm Tista.
It feels like we're well and truly into the depths of winter, the dark nights and the cool mornings, and I love any excuse for getting my wool jumpers out and the heating blasting. And we're less than a month to go to Christmas and then finally waving a big cheerio to 2020, a year that most people probably won't be sad to see the back of. Are you a big Christmas fan, Tista?
yeah, to be honest, I love any chance for a celebration, Amber, and Christmas is no different. Now that it's December, can't wait to get up that tree and some decorations out. And this year, my husband's working Christmas Day, so we're actually going to get to celebrate it twice. So very much looking forward to all the incredible food and drink that's coming our way. Mm. We've also got some super exciting Sand New Sisters treats lined up to get us in the mood. So super excited for those. Have you started buying any gifts yet, Amber?
Not yet, actually. I'm so awful at present buying. I'm always struggling to think of good gifts. But fortunately, one of my sisters is excellent at this, so she's always on hand for helpful suggestions. And I should probably keep my eye out for any Black Friday bargains.
Definitely. And I hope that you, our listeners at home, enjoyed hearing from Professor Andrew Weeks in episode 3 as he shared his thoughts on maintaining supervision during COVID. Andrew's Twitter takeover was such a success, and we're so excited to see many new listeners across the globe joining in with such great questions. Kate from Liverpool was asking about research outputs within a PhD and how we can utilise our supervisors to achieve this. Deepa from London pointed out the value of face-to-face interaction in teaching to help build engagement and facilitate questions and discussions.
We had Beth in London share how much an impact good supervision has made on her clinical career, and we discussed what we can learn from each other in the clinical and research supervision settings. Migrant mothers got in touch to ask about support for students during grant applications in this ever-changing European landscape. We've had so many comments and reflections which have been really encouraging, including Prof Mirzoev from Leeds. So thank you so much for getting involved.
And if you haven't had a chance to listen to our episode with Andrew yet, please do catch up. It's not one you want to miss. This week, Amber's been chatting with Nashna Maharajan about study management during COVID. So let's have a listen to hear what Nashna has to say.
Welcome, and it is my pleasure this week to introduce to you Nashna Maharajan, who is working currently in Nepal and has a Bachelor's of Science in Nursing and then went on to study for her Master's in Health Promotion and Education. And Nashna is currently a research officer in the Mother and Infant Research Activities in Kathmandu, Nepal. She has a vast experience working within maternal health and multiple projects over many, many years. And we're really, really thrilled to have you with us, Nashna, to share some of your anecdotes and stories regarding study management during COVID-19.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Could you give us a couple of sentences just to outline the actual project that you're working with at the moment?
Okay, here in Nepal, I am working in a research organization that basically conducts studies on maternal and child health and nutrition sector. This organization has been conducting researches for over 25 years and has collaborated with several national and international organizations, both governmental and non-governmental. Here, I recently worked in a mixed method study titled Understanding the Factors Contributing to Maternal Mortality in Nepal. And currently, I am also working on a growth monitoring and promotion study in collaboration with JSI Research and Training Center, which is funded by the USAID Advancing Nutrition.
Brill. So our first question then, how has COVID and the fact that travel internationally from and in country perhaps amongst researchers has been limited, how has that impacted decolonization of global health, and how has the relationships and dynamics between high income countries and low and middle income countries been affected on the back of this?
I think global health by nature, it's about high income countries trying to support low income countries like Nepal. So in this sense, I think decolonizing refers to involving researchers like me from LMIC in improving our health system and setting different research agendas based on our national priorities and producing data that can help the policymakers here in our countries to make different evidence-based decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that has been happening in Nepal. However, during this pandemic, I think the focus shifted entirely towards COVID. And most of the non-COVID related health researches had to be postponed or stopped midway due to the pandemic.
Has there been any impact on your work directly from COVID with regards to maybe working with partners internationally? Has that changed things for you?
In Nepal, lockdown was enforced during the month of March, and we had just finished our field-based data collection, thankfully. It was, and we were preparing for data analysis within the MIRA team. However, due to the lockdown, especially due to the lockdown, our maternal mortality study, which was a fixed priced funded study of 22 months, it was. We had challenges in that study. You know, the deadline for completion of deliverable had already crossed and we had to work without payment. Also, you know, in that study, we had to conduct a workshop, dissemination workshops with our stakeholders. Mm-hmm. It had to be completed by July. However, due to the current lockdown, most of our stakeholders, they were busy in managing COVID. For your information, most of our mm-hmm. stakeholders in the field area, our field area was basically nearby the Indian border, and that was highly affected by the COVID pandemic. And our stakeholders who were doctors, healthcare workers, other healthcare workers, local health coordinators, their work mainly shifted towards managing COVID, so they could not manage time for dissemination. That's how it affected our study.
Yeah. You said that things were meant to get wrapped up and you were already beyond your deadline. Did funders give you any extra time or funding? Was that ever discussed as an option because mm-hmm. of COVID?
This study was a fixed priced study for 22 months. And, you know, the deadline was extended. However, the funding was not. So we had to work without payment for the rest of the month.
Gosh, that's quite a big ask of, you know, members of staff. Were people quite forthcoming mm-hmm. to see the project completed and to work without pay? Or was there quite a lot of upheaval because of that?
Well, we had to complete the study. However, for the study, we had contracted external experts and consultants. However, due to limitation of funds, we could no longer take help from them. Anyway, we managed to complete the study at last.
Fantastic. Thinking about study management and thinking about COVID, and possibly from your own experiences or those that you work closely with, do you think that collaboration and connection has been something that we're doing better or worse because of the pandemic?
Yeah, the pandemic certainly posed challenges in various aspects of our study, like I mentioned earlier. And the primary way of interaction was through face-to-face meetings before the COVID, and those were limited. However, this pandemic, it gave us opportunities to adapt to the virtual world using multiple new technologies such as Zoom, Meet, and Skype was already there. Yeah, so we used those digital media like Skype and Zoom to communicate within our team members. We also used them to communicate with our international partners. But working from home and working with these visual methods were quite challenging for us.
Yeah, I'm sure. Did you ever use these platforms to interact with research participants?
No, but we used them to share our findings, because soon after lockdown, we divided the tasks among the team members. And some of us took part of the qualitative data analysis. Some of us took part of quantitative data analysis. And we used these mediums to discuss what our findings were.
Brilliant. And was that something you think was well received? Was it particularly tricky to do via online? Or was that something that you think was beneficial and maybe allowed a wider spread and dissemination of results?
Well, during the pandemic, those virtual mediums were only accessible to us. But due to the poor internet, we could not connect properly. The work had to be done by sending multiple emails, which would normally have been completed in a few days if we had worked from the office instead of. Nonetheless, we analyzed the data and the right findings and also shared them among the team members virtually. But like I said earlier, the real problem occurred during the dissemination time. Originally, we had planned to invite those stakeholders from our working areas, Kathmandu, and conduct a dissemination workshops. But sadly, we could not do that.
Yeah. So, and as you were saying, you know, when stakeholders involved are clinicians as well, and when something like a pandemic comes, unfortunately, priorities do get shifted. And do you feel from your experience that that has very much has been what's happened with people who do academic clinical work? Have they been pulled 100% into clinical activities and their research has been neglected?
So in our study, there were health workers who worked in the hospital. During this pandemic, they had to commit fully to caring the patients and they had to go back to the hospitals for full time. Not only in health sectors, it happened in academic sector as well. Some of my friends from public health who worked as lecturers in government universities, they were sent to countries border to do health checkups of labor migrants returning back to Nepal, which is certainly a new role for them.
Yeah. Do you think because of COVID-19, where people, as you correctly say, have been assigned to new roles, whether that be like your friends in public health who have been dispersed to borders to do things they haven't done maybe before, or those who have had to step up into positions because people from outside of country are no longer able to come and fulfill that role, has there been improved training opportunities for people?
About that, during the pandemic, during the first 3 or 4 months of the lockdown in Nepal, there were almost none. In fact, I had applied for a national workshop on human nutrition research just before the COVID, and it was originally scheduled to take place in Kathmandu during the month of May. However, it was postponed to the due to the global threat of COVID to an unspecified date. It had still not been conducted.
But they are regularly hosting a webinar series now. Even the organizations that used to conduct annual training workshops in a closed venue has now opened registrations for virtual trainings.
And do you think they've been received well by people?
Obviously, it's a new opportunity for all of us. And these webinars in Nepal, most of them are free of cost. And you see, these workshops, they used to take a registration fee before, but due to the pandemic, they shifted towards virtual workshops, virtual conferences, and people, I think this shift towards virtual conferences has allowed people to participate more fully than ever before. Like for many researchers, just like me, we sometimes could not, attend in person in the conferences. Yeah. And due to this provision of virtual media, we are now able to participate in those conferences and also for free of cost.
I think that's definitely something, isn't it, that open up a whole host of not only in Nepal for you, but also worldwide whenever you can click a button and join in. And there definitely is a, I appreciate your frustration saying that things have been cancelled in person. I know that from personal experience. I had a couple of research methodology courses booked in and got cancelled and been cancelled again, and now it's just got a question mark beside it, possibly summer 21. And you know, it's trying to then, yeah, I think as early career researchers, those sorts of things are frustrating, but also on the positive side, in some ways, other opportunities have opened up for us to access material. And I guess it's trying to seek those out and utilize them and encourage one another, especially whenever in country you're being asked to take on roles that maybe you've not really been trained for, and how we best go about that. Do you think people who maybe have had to take on new roles, new skill sets, thinking about things, do you think that's been well received by staff, or is it quite a daunting and overwhelming thing for them, or do you think they relish the challenge and stepping up to the mark? Do you think,
you know, some of my colleagues, they had to, you know, work in, you know, they had to take a new role that they were not expected to. Obviously, they might have, they might not have good reaction at first, but what they had to do.
There wasn't another choice.
there was no choice.
I wonder what that looks like, though, going forward, because they've now been sort of forced into this position, but actually, maybe once they become more comfortable and realize, oh, I actually am capable or more capable than I thought, or, you know, I didn't realize I would be good at this. I wonder what that looks like then moving forward in sort of post-COVID landscape, because I think it definitely will equip.
Maybe that might open doors for more opportunities for them. You never know.
Well, I think, it's interesting to think about that, isn't it? And sort of wonder what does the research field look like, for example, in Nepal, if it's purely all Nepali people carrying out that research? Granted, there will always be input, won't there? As you say, right back at the beginning, it's, you felt about high-income countries supporting low-middle-income countries. But if we can build up, equip low middle income countries to take the onus of the research and push it forward, then I think that from a sustainability and from a long-term point of view, it can only be a good thing.
Yeah, I think so too.
Have there been discussions? I'm sure there's research networks in Nepal for everyone countrywide. Have there been meetings thinking about that? Has there been anything that has been discussed or spoken about that you're aware of?
Yeah, due to the current pandemic, the research calls are mostly related to COVID. And within our MIRA team, we had discussed about why not to develop proposals, focusing on improving the maternal health care during this pandemic situation. We did think of that. And we are hoping to apply for funds, and we are developing proposals and teaming up with some international partners as well.
Brilliant. Thinking about one positive thing that you have learned from study management, from COVID-19, that you would take forward in your further work and your further research, what would it be?
Positive thing is that we became more familiar with the technologies. We conducted virtual meetings and workshops, so I think we can use them in the future to save time and money. You know, we can also provide trainings to our field researchers using these virtual media. Or I think we can also collaborate better with our partners outside of the nations, outside of our nation, through these platforms. You know, they do not have to spend funds in traveling, and instead that could be spent entirely here.
Yeah, and I think you're, that's really a valid and valuable point, really, that the money that is spent on international travel obviously will be vastly reduced, certainly during COVID and possibly moving forward, as you say. And it makes us question, doesn't it, how crucial is every trip from a finance point of view, and also if we're looking sort of at climate change and all of that, you know, carbon footprint of international travel on a regular basis, you know, for lots of research institutions to evidence that actually they are mindful of that. And as you say, the online platforms alongside good internet, which is varying in different places, you know, it really does open up a new world. And we have been hearing this when we've been chatting to other people as well, that it really has turned things around, and how people were quite reserved in their opinions about it before have actually, because they've had to, you know, have really warmed to it and embraced it and seen the good things that can come from it. So I think it's an exciting time to think and dream about what the future of research looks like. And I guess as well, how do we as maternal health or newborn health specialists keep maternal and global health, or maternal and newborn health, on the global agenda? Because as you're saying, everything has been kind of railroaded by COVID. Funding, the agenda has become COVID. And actually, there's questions there, isn't there, to think, well, how do we campaign, champion, drive forward, push forward with the maternal and newborn health agenda?
So in Nepal, many experts now they feel that COVID-19 is taking away the achievements Nepal made in maternal health sector in the past 2 decades. You know, in Nepal, there was a significant reduction in maternal mortality rate before, but during this pandemic, we've been getting news of women, especially in the rural areas of Nepal, not getting services with the shutdown of health facilities or unavailability of healthcare workers.
Yeah, you know, it's certainly something through this podcast that we want to really raise awareness and champion the global maternal and newborn health agenda, that it can't be detracted from, it cannot be overlooked in the light of a pandemic. And if anything, how can we utilize this opportunity to weave those two things together, where we can receive the funding, we can answer those research questions, those new research questions that are coming up, but actually still get on with what we've been doing, as you say, for the last 20 years in Nepal. We've seen care improve massively. It would be such a shame to see that start to backslide because of this. So I think just the work that you're doing, the work that your colleagues are doing in country, is so important, so crucial.
This is a tough time for all of us. I hope this will pass away soon and will open doors for new opportunities in future.
Well, listen, it's been an absolute privilege to speak with you today and just to hear some of your thoughts, and just so encouraged to think that the new opportunities that will present themselves and are already presenting themselves to us, not just in Nepal, but worldwide, on the back of COVID, and also the positive outlook that we have on this new virtual world that we find ourselves in with regards to collaboration and a sharing of ideas, a dissemination of results of the work that we're all doing at the minute. So thank you so much for your time. It really has been a pleasure, and I wish you all the best with the work that you're doing.
Thank you so much for inviting me to be your guest in your podcast and letting me share some of my thoughts. Thank you so much.
So Tista, what really stood out to you from what Nashna shared?
It was such a pleasure to listen to Nashna, and I think she highlighted a really big difficulty that lots of researchers across disciplines have faced during the pandemic, and that's funding. It's really so inspiring to hear of researchers like Nashna and her team who are so committed to their work that despite lack of funding are being creative and innovative to find solutions, such as upskilling themselves to mitigate for lack of expert input, or even using digital media, and so are somehow managing to push on with their work. I was also really interested to hear her perspective on how she saw decolonization of global health. That for it to truly work, it relies on researchers in country driving the setup of research priorities and questions. And I think this is key in creating context-specific questions, means that we can create context-specific solutions. And that's really going to be ultimately perhaps helpful and useful This also can have a knock-on effect in increasing the chance of buy-in from clinicians, policymakers, and key actors at country level. So it was really fascinating to hear that point. Amber, what were your thoughts about what Nashna had to say?
I think there were so many great points and actually lots of thought-provoking things that she raised. And in particular, I focus on what she said about, due to COVID, them not having access to the experts that they previously did due to clinical commitments and that shift with clinical work. She described task shifting and redirection of resource into clinical work and public health matters. And I think we just have to be mindful and really champion for ongoing high quality research to be continued where it's safe to do so despite the pandemic. Anecdotally, Nashna shared about a reduction in access to healthcare facilities due to COVID closures, which of course is detrimental to women and children.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a really timely reminder that despite a global pandemic, we want to keep moving forward and use this platform to champion researchers and clinicians alike to continue their hard work in whatever sphere they're working in. So if you've been listening, perhaps you've got some thoughts or comments about something that Nashna or Amber or I have shared today. Why not let us know on Twitter at SANU Sisters or Instagram at SANU Sisters Podcast, just to keep that conversation going.
And next time, Tista's chatting with Alice Beardmore-Gray, who is a fellow obstetric trainee and early career researcher at King's College London. Alice is based out of Zambia at the minute and is the trial manager for Cradle 4. They'll be talking about study recruitment during COVID and how she has overcome challenges with this. So we can't wait for you to join us then. Until next time.